I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 110 of Digital Divination. Ron will begin with the ritualistic disclaimer.
That's right. Ritualistic. So anyway, I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs. And in going back over the last couple of Digital Divinations we've done, this is very ritualistic. Jason, now you have to follow it up with an amen or yes. So shall it be, or he is risen indeed, or something like that.
I was ready to do that. I was ready to do that.
Yeah, he was just waiting for that pause.
Yeah.
And then we go on. Well, gentlemen, this is the Monday night of Memorial Day weekend. Are you ready for the start of summer?
Kind of. I mean, as ready as I get. This is, you know, it's been, the spring has been so short that sort of casually taking care of some spring things have suddenly now they're all done and it's summertime. So I guess it's success. Yeah. Springtime success.
Success.
How about yourself?
I have 2 weeks left of school. So I have this week and next week, and then I'm done. And I am going to teach a class online asynchronously over the June to July, which basically means I just grade once a week for it. Because it's already set up and just kind of runs. This whole time since Christmas has just gone by so fast for me, just blown by.
Yeah.
So. How about yourself,
Jason? Stuff has happened. I'm hoping that I'm ready for summer, being in the new place. We don't know how hot or not it's going to get in here when it gets to be hot. We have like a portable AC unit that we can find a place for if we need to, but fingers crossed. We have some shade. It's been very nice. It hasn't gotten too hot here. Even on the days it's gotten up to like 89, 90, the house has been nice and cool. So
yeah, no, that's. Well, I think you being in the lower part of the house will be cooler than where Ron is above the garage.
I'm right underneath a skylight where the sun just beats down on the roof. Yeah. I actually just rearranged my office a little bit. It is almost imperceptible from the vantage point you guys have. But I moved some stuff around knowing that I'm going to get my portable air conditioner, bring it up from the garage into here. Mm-hmm. So. Nice. Soon it will be nice and, you know, as chilly as I'd like. For the last few months, I've been able to have the window open, and that's enough, but it won't be enough.
Will that be your first time using that one, or did you lose? I don't remember when you got it.
No, I used it last. No, I'll tell you that it is new, and it is new because I got the brand new air conditioner last summer. Hand-me-down air conditioners. It's kind of nice. I got one several years ago from Scott Keim. And then I got one from you, John.
Yeah.
Last year, it was, you know, brand new. I'd set it up. I'd been running it for about a week. And then I get a call from my mom in Oregon. This is about, you know, about a year ago.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Ronnie, it's just been so hot here. And my air conditioner kind of isn't cutting it. And I look at my old air conditioner, the one that Scott had given me that was just about, you know, just about giving up the ghost. And then the new one that you gave me, and I kind of sighed and I'll be like, okay, Mom, I'm going to bring you an air conditioner. And I brought her the newer, nicer one. So I struggled through with Scott's for just another couple of months. But then at the end of the season, when everything kind of went on sale, I bought a new one. And so that's the one that I'm going to bring up. So until somebody else in my family calls and needs an air conditioner, and then I guess they get new one. And
I had two of those, and I gave the other one to Mark because he's up in the top end of his house as well. And hopefully that works. So I ended up, I had to get a new furnace last year. And as part of that, I got a heat pump, which gives my house air conditioning. So I had these two from the previous year that I purchased finally because it was so hot and I couldn't stand it. And now I don't need them. So anyway, Well, good.
Okay.
Good. Well, I don't have a segue from that. So I'll just, yeah, I'm thinking, speaking of cold air.
No. Hold on. No. I got one. I got it. You want to talk about what's hot?
Yes. Okay. There you go.
Let's talk about what's hot. It's PaizoCon. It's PaizoCon weekend. I've been practicing my segues lately.
Good. You've been quite good at it with the scum and villainy stuff. So,
thank you. That's
been good. Yeah.
You're gonna be. For general, are you entering like this a segue competition, Jason? That you're gonna.
I'm hoping to get a new job and recording, I guess, on a public radio. Maybe I don't know.
There you go.
I say I've been practicing. I'd had a good one at the PaizoCon panel that I was kind of volunteered to moderate. I had a little opening chat and I was like, speaking of, I can't even remember what it was, but I was like, speaking of this, let's get to the questions. It was a Q&A.
Which one was the panel you were moderating?
The GM tips and tricks panel. Oh. So it's just sort of like six of us are sort of like talking about GM stuff. I love doing that. I think I did that panel like nearly every year. And it does sort of like boil down to the same thing a lot of the times, but it's still good to get in some specific questions that people ask that are, you know, like how do you fix a problem? Like Maria. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, so what does but, it boil down to, though? I want to know what it boils down to now. If it's the same,
it boils down to communicate, talking. Okay. To your group. Talk to your group. If you have a problem, talk to your group. If things are boring, talk to your group. If there's a player who's having some issues, talk to them. It just comes down to just talking like human beings to one another. I didn't bring up because I know there's been some there's this like Twitter thread or other social media thread going around about this like screenshot from Reddit of like 44 rules that this GM put down, and it's like 44 of the red flaggiest red flags that you've ever red flagged, and it there's a lot of discourse about that, and it's basically these people don't seem like they like playing with each other, that's for sure, and that sounds awful. But the GM tips was just basically like, talk to your players. We had Tom Nelson, who created a product called the Deck of Player Safety, and it is a neat little sort of accessory that you can use, and I think it's like available for free online through Demiplane or something like that. So hey, you're welcome, Tom, for the free plug on this wide-reaching podcast.
Yes. Well,
The things like that, the GM tips and tricks tends to be very well attended. It's actually really smart. It's a really smart panel because people who are kind of insecure about their GMing want to go because they want to learn. And even people who are kind of secure about it are like, well, I can probably learn a couple of things, right? There's that kind of the kind of advice service that hits across a wide range of people in the hobbies, you know, how can you improving your golf swing, both novices and, you know, people who've been golfing for a while are like, well, I want to improve my golf swing. It's like tips and tricks for GMing is exactly the same way. It's even people who've been doing it for a while who are in a purely like objective sense, very good at it, are still like, I want more tips and tricks. Right. So
always, it's always room to improve. This is like GMing and even playing a little bit is a bit of a muscle that you just need to kind of like.
I mean, except practice. You two are great. That's you have no improvement needed. You know,
exceeds expectations.
That, yeah. 5 out of 5.
That exceeding expectations is good, but that doesn't mean you can't improve.
Yeah. Yes. Speaking of GMing, I GM the Starfinder Society Special $6.99. which kicks off the new Starfinder organized play season. And I realized I hadn't GM'd a special for almost a year, since like last year.
Got your five Novas and went home. That was
No. Well, that was like 4 years ago, 3 years ago I got them. But I typically try to GM the special every year, but I don't do a lot of extra specials besides that, you know, because I like to do them when they first come out, either play them or run them. And usually I run them if we need things. And it was fun. This is the first special that I've done, any special, and I've run about 20 of them, right? That we actually finished early. I think the developers finally realized that maybe we need to cut them down a little bit.
Yeah, so
what level characters were you running?
Well, this is for this special, they only ran two kind of tiers, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So I ran 3 to 4. They had run up to 8 for the last several, and like the first special ran 1 to 12. And they realized at that time there weren't a lot of people that had 12. So myself and another person ran it at Gen Con, and there were 2 tables, right? Mm. Whereas this one, we had 44 tables, 42 tables, half of which were online, half of which were in person at the various PaizeCon kind of
satellite locations.
Satellite ones, yeah.
They had a term for them. I don't remember, but
yeah, there's a name.
Affiliates? Was it affiliates?
Well, it's like PaizeCon here or something like that. They So KublaCon was the one last year, and then this year, Mox was added, and a couple others. Hmm. So I think whoever kind of put in and say, hey, yeah, we'd like to do it. So that was kind of neat.
It was just first to fourth level?
Yeah, just first to fourth level.
That surprises me because this upcoming seat, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the upcoming Starfinder Society season is the last one for first edition Starfinder. So I would think this would sort of kick off with, you know, bring your highest level, toughest characters out to play for a whole year, because this is the last play you get in them, and then you've got to make brand new characters for Starfinder season, or Starfinder organized play for Starfinder Society for second edition.
That's short-sighted. This is like, you know that Starfinder second edition is coming out, so try Starfinder, this big, massive special. It's only tiers 1 to 2 and 3 to 4, so it's easy to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you spend time learning a system that's like... about to go away. Well, I guess it's not going away for you. You can get a lot of play in a year, to be perfectly honest.
A year and a half, even, I would say, because it's not going to come out until August. Not a half, but a year and a quarter, maybe, right?
You know, a year and a couple months.
That's true.
But you could keep playing Starfinder first edition too if you wanted.
Sure.
You can keep playing. Don't they still have third edition Pathfinder Society year 1 or year 0 adventures from way back in the day? You still technically play those, right?
So I also did headquarters for PaizeCon, so the online headquarters. There was one Pathfinder first edition game in our whole thing of like 40 plus games.
What level were they?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't pay attention.
Okay. I would think higher level, because once you've earned your way up, you're reluctant to let those levels go. Frankly, if somebody told me that I could play a Living Greyhawk adventure and I could bring out my old third 17th level third edition D&D players, I know where they're at. It's in the room right behind me. I could go find my character, I could find my wife's character. Let's go.
But they did have some interesting announcements for Starfinder 2nd Edition. I thought we could chat about a little bit if you guys wanted.
Sure, yeah.
Can I tell you the most exciting thing that I heard? Have known all the way through Starfinder 1st Edition. And when I got to write for Pact Worlds, which talked about all the different planets in the Pact Worlds for Starfinder 1st Edition, and I got to write about Octurn, right, which is the the elder gods, you know, evil cult planet where Nyarlathotep walks in order to, you know, keep the cult spinning. There's some sort of nascent evil deity inside the planet that one day was going to hatch and bring ruin to everything, and it hatches.
Yeah,
that's the thing I learned this weekend, is that the Octurn has now birthed the newborn, which is going to be an entity in Starfinder 2nd Edition.
It has. I mean, that's one of those things. It hasn't happened yet, technically.
But it's gonna.
and that's going to be in a playtest adventure. It's that. Mm-hmm. That's the birthday celebration,
Cosmic birthday.
Yeah. And I think that's the one that we intend to start with. Is that right, Jason? Because the second one doesn't come out. Yeah, that one comes out right after Gen Con.
Wait, did I just learn a spoiler then? Was I not supposed to know that?
I shall erase it from my mind. No, they're telling everybody what happens in it, so it's not like it's an actual spoiler.
Yeah. And then in October, there's the higher level one is coming out. So
yeah, that's level 10. We we learned a little bit more about that one, actually. It's called Empires Devoured. It appears to kick off a war between the Aslanti Star Empire and the Vescarium. And because of the name, because of some of the stuff that Thursday said in one of the panels, I'm pretty sure that the there's also the Cult of the Devourer involved in there.
Something about devouring, yes.
Yeah, something about devouring. Yeah. More, one of the things that I think it's kind of cool looking, that they showed off a little bit of art from that module. And there is a new type of Aslanti baddies.
It's blue. As
purple. Well, it looked more purple to me.
Blue's I thought it was blue. Yeah.
But known as the Sahedron Guard.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
Okay.
And I'm excited to see what they're all about and what's going on in these. Have this fracture.
They were described as very punchable Nazi types.
They'd have to be pretty fascist to be more fascist than the actual fascists.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, they were already, they're extra punchable because the Aslanti Star Empire are always punchable, very punchable Nazis.
Yes, yeah, so. And they also mentioned that they're going to have, they described a total of 4 playtest scenarios. I don't know if that was the right word.
I think scenario was, yeah, something like that.
Kind of like venture length. So at level 5, level 10 and level 15. I don't know if the first, maybe level
Wait,
one.
So a cosmic, you mean 4 of the sort of size and span of a cosmic birthday?
No, they're no. They're talking
shorter,
about
shorter than that.
PF, like SFS so. Scenario yeah. length. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there might
That's
even
why
be
I said like kind of like scenarios shorter.
I think they might even be under the Starfinder Society scenario banner, technically. Okay. They will just be like playtest scenarios.
Right.
That'll probably be getting tables and stuff like that in various places.
And they said they'd have pre-gens for like the 1st and 5th level, but
yeah.
For levels 10 and 15, they wanted you to make your own characters and do that and provide feedback. And they weren't like stress testing like they did for Pathfinder 2nd edition. It was more because they feel comfortable with the game engine and mechanics. It's more just put it out there and get feedback. And, right. and they talked a little
Yeah. Do the ancestries make sense? Do the, class abilities make sense? 5th, 10th, and 15th are smart levels to be testing because those are where the big power jumps are.
Yeah, no, I think that's good because we noticed when we're playing, there's a big difference in how some of the classes play and stuff. And so it's good to get, I'm sure they do a lot of internal play testing, but it's good to get some more folks kind of pushing that boundary.
Yeah. They're talking about some of the new spells that they're adding in, and one of them is the carcinization spell, which is pretty hilarious. I wasn't sure if this one spell was called New Game or New Game Plus. There was something like that. There was a real high level spell that I didn't explain what it did, but it, another sort of Starfinder-y kind of name. Stuff like that. I mean, there's some, other arts that they're showing off. It all looks pretty good. They had Kyle on, Kyle Hunter, to basically talk about, how he wanted to take that sort of like starship, that sort of bolted and rusty sort of starship feel that kind of exists in the first edition and a lot of things and sort of soften it a little bit, give it a little put a little more fantasy back in the science fantasy.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. They also talked about starship combat. A question came up. And it sounds like they're going to allow both narrative and more number crunchy upgrading and doing kind of thing. They're kind of like, they said they haven't ironed it out, but they're kind of looking at both directions. So to allow kind of both of that. Both of those ways of playing. So.
Yeah. We'll have to see what the number crunching part of Starship Combat kind of looks like. If it's going to be similar to what exists already, or more like Second Edition Pathfinder stuff that like chases and research and infiltration and stuff like that.
Well, it could be more if it's more thorough like that. It becomes less optional, because right now you could run stuff and if you don't do a starship combat, then at most you've sort of lost your players one encounter's worth of XP, maybe two encounters worth if it were like a particularly robust Starship Combat. But if your group kind of didn't gel with Starship Combat, then it felt, in first edition, it felt, you know, kind of, you could, then you could slot in the narrative rules and be just fine, right? Yeah. But if it does something like a robust, like the intrigue subsystem or something like that, that's the, or the influence subsystem, that's a really not just a robust sort of point gathering system, but has several markers and issues at which you gain XP, I could see a structure in which half the XP you get from a level is a particularly robust Starship sort of combat slash mission slash chase, whatever.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you do end up doing, you know, narrative stuff for that, you can always just also just give out the same amount of XP as if it were a regular fight. I mean, that's the sort of thing. You can always kind of skip any encounter and just give the XP for it if you really want to.
Oh, that's true. And that's if you're the old XP using, you know, traditionalists rather than one of those newfangled milestone leveling sorts.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the milestone leveling.
Oh, yeah.
Something... This is Starfinder first edition, but I thought was interesting, and Jenny talked about it a little bit earlier. In Mechageddon, apparently the mechs can transform, and one of them can transform into a starship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That is something that I heard, too, that there's definitely at least one or two chassis that do a transform.
I thought that was really cool. Yeah.
As a, just a complete sidebar here real quick, speaking of transformations, I actually got in the mail yesterday the last book that I worked on for Renegade Transformers, this book called The Enigma of Combination, which is about playing the big combiner teams. And so that was kind of fun. I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting this to actually get a hardcover copy of it, but I've got it. And there's all the art and stuff that I ordered and stuff. It's fun. So it's cool. Cool to look through that. And remember, I don't remember much about Transformers. I've pushed it all out of my head.
Yes, gotta flush that when the new stuff comes in. They talked quite a bit about the classes, the Silurian. One thing in the playtest I noticed, and they talked about this a little bit more, where you don't have to focus just on armor, shield, or weapon. The Silurian can get all of those in one Silurian. So that was kind of neat.
And you can accelerate your mode, right? You don't have to be sort of waiting until the third round before you can do kind of cool things.
Yeah, other things early on, yeah.
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 Talked about how the operative was more focused on kind of gunplay. So something with that. So I don't know for what that's worth.
Yeah, I want to say that was one of the... I saw some of the screenshots they made, and the operative was one of the screenshots that... I didn't see it at a resolution level to go in and, okay, what's this? What's up? But I tried, right, with the resolution that I had. So that's I think a good sign that it's going to be of particular interest, you know, when I see that, you know.
I think Thirsty mentioned that on that page was like, it just says, one of the things it says trained proficiency in guns.
That's right. Like, hey, and then it has to define later guns. What guns are.
What is guns?
Be guns. So anyway, so it looks like from the sound of it, they're going to have quite a few playtest things come out throughout the year.
Yeah.
So it won't be this dearth of things to do, and they're going to keep bringing out. It sounds like a really nice launch for second edition, quite frankly.
Yeah, and it'll just
kind of... Well, and that's also going to make it so they can actually digest playtest feedback a lot easier. You know, I can tell you from my time at doing all the Unearthed Arcanas recently at Wizards of the Coast, having time to digest feedback before you're looking at the next piece of feedback is important for sort of employee peace of mind. It's also, you know, make sure you can get through, you know, the numerous people. It's exciting to be in a hobby where you have so many people who are willing to test stuff for you and then tell you about what they did being able to go through. I mean, that makes it worth, yeah, I mean, it makes it all worth looking at, and be having the time to do that, think about it, iterate on it, is a really important part of the process. So I'm actually really, I'm really pleased to hear that they're kind of taking their time to put it, as much as I might want to jump from one thing to another as a player, right? Knowing that they're taking their time feels to me like they're doing it right. So,
yeah.
God, related, I am terrified to start looking at the Battlecry playtest feedback, which I will be having to do within the next, you know, after the next month. That's all going to be, when that's complete, I'm going to have to sort through that and look for.
Yeah, they said there were thousands of people, thousands of downloads.
So many. So.
That's good.
And there's, yeah, it's great. It's great. I love that we're getting a lot of feedback. I've never had to like kind of like absorb feedback on the scale before, so I'm just terrified to do it.
Well, and there's a lot of, I mean, gosh, being able to play with a lot of data is fun, and the more of it you have, the more you can do with the responses and see how they slice in different ways. So, I've enjoyed that quite a bit. So that's been good. Having a lot of data is intimidating, but it is so worth it because you get to play with sort of a lot of different things. But I'll say the less of the written feedback that you take personally, all the better. So,
of course, yes, I don't plan on taking any of it actually personally. I just,
It's also one of the things that's really interesting is people will give you really good feedback, very clever feedback about rules that don't actually exist, but which they think exist. And so sometimes you have to be careful to take what people are saying and you're like, did it actually say that? And I'll go look quick. It never actually, that isn't in fact the rule. They're saying very clever things about something that isn't actually the rule. So it can sometimes, anyway, it's a lot of fun. Enjoy, even if there's a ton of it. I've only so far just skimmed the Commander and the Guardian in that Battlecry playtest, but yeah. I'm excited for it.
How did your playtest go, Jason?
Oh yeah, I did a playtest yesterday, and it went well. I got some good information. I did also learned a little bit better on how to playtest in some fashion because I presented a moderate and a severe encounter for their level, and they stomped on it, both of them, pretty handily. All the classes were doing what they were supposed to do, and I was rolling terribly. You know, that's, you know, anecdotally a bit of a fluke, but they're, you know, also like the fighter rolled two criticals in the first round on reactions, basically, you know. Because it was like the fighter, it's not to do with the, you know, the fighter was there, prepped a strike to come for when something got close, got a critical. And then before the fighter's turn came up again, the commander was like, hit him again. Here's a free reaction. And bam. Another critical. I was just like, oh boy.
That's what fighters are supposed to do, right? They've got the accuracy in the system where,
yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to count on the fighter doing at least, you know, some critting, if not that much critting, just because that's kind of the way they're built, is to have the higher attack modifier.
Indeed. And then I had the Guardian, you know, jumped in the way of one ranged attack, completely negated it. Because it didn't do a lot of damage, and then there's a level 4 feat that says if you're in an area effect, you can lower your reflex save to up someone else's reflex save. Gave the fighter +2 to the reflex save, which made it into a critical, which means the fighter took no damage from that area effect. And but the Guardian did. That was like the only damage I did in that one fight was just a little bit of area effect. It was good. So it's working good. I'm already aware of a lot of things that this is getting a little off track, of course, but I'm aware of some things that I definitely want to change. But I'm also thinking about that a little bit, you know, after seeing, and I've got another one planned, and I might do a third one before the end of June if I can swing it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well,
did you get a lot of personal feedback from them about, I thought this played just like it was supposed to, or this felt good, or I felt like this should do more. I mean, it was.
Yeah. I'll why not? My playtesters included Mark Seifter and Linda Zayas Palmer.
You had some very informed people.
Very informed, very good at making characters. I'll tell you that too, right? Mm-hmm. Mark made a commander whose actual speed was 5 feet, but then had a mount, so could actually get around the battlefield, but because of the commander not being didn't build him as a strength build, and then just took a bunch of heavy armor and just sort of tanked his actual speed, and had had one of the bigger shields that tanks your speed too. Yeah. It was wild. Linda made a Leshy fighter, of course.
Expected.
Current coworker Andrew White also sort of sat in and did the Guardian, and he made a big awakened animal pig, basically a boar, who was like, I want to see how big large I can be. And he took the feat that makes you even larger when you're in heavy armor. So it was like, yeah, okay. It was good. It was some good stress testing, and everyone felt like they, you know, the people who were running the support classes felt like they were supporting, and the people who were being supported by the support classes felt like the support classes were supporting them. So, it's kind of working as planned for now. It just needs lots of sanding all the rough edges down as usual.
Yeah.
Do you feel like sort of where they're at now, if somebody let's say in Starfinder Second Edition, right? The fact that you can kind of blend characters to and from Commander and Guardian seem to me like classes that kind of step right off the page into Starfinder, no problem, right? Having sort of a military leaders is or you know the tough, you know, Vanguard-ish sort of characters feel like they could be just right at home in Starfinder Second Edition.
Yeah, I definitely think the Guardian could, because, you know, there's sort of that, it doesn't rely on, it's not a, you know, like a champion's magic, you know, ours and stuff like that. I wonder how they, if you want to do an envoy and a commander in the same party, they kind of sort of fill similar roles, but not similar mechanics, so they might blend nicely together. I don't know yet, but yeah.
One of Vanguard and the Guardian, too, for that matter, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, if they have a Vanguard in second edition, if that happens.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, there were entire Pathfinder first edition classes that never made it into Pathfinder second edition. Haven't yet, I guess I should say.
Well, they did talk about Pathfinder, the player two core, that listed another, like, I think 9 classes that came in, which are
7 and it's like 7 and 7. They're evenly split between player core 1 7 and player 7? 2. It's something like that. It's or 6 and 6 or something. So it might be 7.
Well, it was more than 6. It seemed like a lot.
Yes. It definitely was a lot. Yeah. That's all good. Although kind of like going back to like what's going to come forward from Starfinder first edition to Starfinder second edition, what they did talk a little bit about the Witchwarper, and some of the language in which they were talking about the Witchwarper was precog language. Paradoxes and anchors. Oh, that's all from the precog class. So I think the precog is getting a little folded into the Witchwarper. So we probably won't see a fully updated precog to second edition.
I'd be excited to see that. I love the precog. I thought that the mechanics really supported the theme of the class in a way that was just a ton of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because you were playing one.
I went all the way through Horizons of the Vast. So first through 13th, you know.
Oh, no, but I meant also that you brought it to the end of the other one, the dragon one, To Defy the Dragon. I saw it in play the first time.
That was the same precog.
It was the same character. Precog. It was the same precog, just at the levels we were playing in Horizons of the Vast. So,
yeah.
Okay, maybe I haven't really spread my precog wings very wide, but yes.
Yeah. But Janelle has seen it all. So.
Yeah. And that's kind of neat because there's a lot of mechanics, I think, that really... That Pathfinder Second Edition has as far as fortune and misfortune effects, that really somebody that leans into those, whether precog or Witchwarper, whoever they want to do, I feel like there's a lot of kind of interesting design space they could go around the theme of sort of bending reality to either know what's going to happen or make some bad luck happen. So I think that'll be kind of neat to see. It's interesting to think that there's no real need for the kind of when they call it an original Starfinder, they called it the legacy races, right? Or they called it something where it was like you could play a gnome or a halfling or a half orc or whatever in Starfinder, kind of tucked in the back of the book. Like, we haven't forgotten about you. If you want to do this, you still can. It's kind of neat that instead of pointing at some specific races like they did in Starfinder first edition, they kind of wave their hand to the whole game, right, of Pathfinder second edition and say, any of that, but be it something that's, you know, been in from the beginning, like a halfling, or be something that's, you know, kind of coming new, like the
puppet,
the commander of the guardian.
Puppet. You know, they're gonna have some puppets doing some puppet NPCs at the very least in Starfinder. They, I mean, it, or some sort of like, because I'm not gonna be able to pronounce the word, but there's a puppet heritage in the Tian Sha character guide that's basically when you want to play essentially like a yokai kind of character, you know, a living umbrella, for instance, awesome. Or a puppet. And so a maybe just a specific puppet heritage in Starfinder second edition that's like, I'm an animatronic that's come to life, right, from a theme park ride.
So not to ruin anything, Jason, you know that book hasn't been released, right?
What? The Tian Sha character? I know, but I've talked about it.
Talked about the puppet character.
Okay, I didn't know. I think you're right. I've seen the art for it. Okay.
There's a very, at the very least, I know there was a stream that aired yesterday that showcased some of these character options.
I didn't see it. Okay, good.
And someone was playing I can't pronounce it.
Okay. Got it. I just want to know if I had to go back and edit. That's all.
No, it's all good.
We're good. We're good. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Now you've got me worried a little bit, but don't take it out. I think it's fine.
Okay.
I think they talked about it.
I didn't watch all the streams. I didn't know. And but I know some stuff about the Tian Sha, and I don't know
available. That's right. You did write it. Did you write for the world guide and the character guide?
I can't say.
You can't say because you never know. I got to say, as a developer,
I'm not allowed
maybe,
to say things. Yeah. I just can't say. Yeah. No, that's just one of those things. All right. Well, you know, this has been an interesting discussion here of both Pathfinder and Starfinder second edition, or Pathfinder Remastered, Starfinder second edition. It's kind of neat to see both of those things actually kind of coming out together almost. And the nice thing about it is with Pathfinder Remastered coming out first, we're going to see those things kind of folded in directly into Starfinder Second Edition, rather than, you know, if we had Pathfinder Second Edition, then Remastered, then start, you know, and then had to have Starfinder Second Edition, you know.
Get remastered, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot smoother this way. So,
Definitely.
Right.
And it's all from the same impetus, right? It all was from the same thing. Divest everything. Let's start moving on second edition. And in the meantime, let's do the remaster, which is already, you know, like all that rules stuff was there. It just needed like some trimming and polishing.
Excellent. Cool. Well, gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun.
It has. It's an exciting weekend.
Yeah.
I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.